The province of the present writer, however, is not to construct a theoretical thesis or to enter into an argument in favor of survival or otherwise, but rather to give an account, in language as simple as possible, of certain experiences that recently fell to his lot. The scientific explanation of the phenomena to be described pertains to a future generation. At present, no one can presume to dogmatize. But surely the time has come for attempting to some measure to grapple in a positive and reasonable manner with this great problem. The writer was recently brought into close touch with the case of an officer who in the prime of life was struck down by a fatal disease, and the following description of his passing over is taken from notes made by the writer at the time. He felt in close touch with the dying man for several weeks, both preceding and following the actual passing away. The writer cannot attempt to explain how or why the following experiences came to him. Whether they were telepathic or otherwise, it is impossible for him to say. They are simply set down in the exact order in which they were seen or heard. Before going further, it should be stated that the editor of the Quest has in his possession full details of the case, Major P.S. name, the address of the house in which he died, and so far as is practicable has satisfied himself as to the bona fides of these experiences. If the notes that follow were not an actual first-hand account of the passing away of life from the physical body, what are they? Hallucination? Yes, probably, but after all that is simply a label and not an explanation in itself. In any case, the writer has set down exactly what he believes actually did take place, both just before and just after the physical dissolution of Major P, and readers are left to form their own conclusions. The notes naturally fall into two divisions: I. A descriptive account of the phenomena observed by the present writer during Major P.S. passing away. 2. Experiences purporting to be of those of the dying man himself, and so far as was possible to ascertain them, what seemed to be his sensations after he actually passed out of the physical body. I. Major P. had been ill for several months, but was in full possession of his faculties until a few days before death, when repeated injections of morphia produced a state of coma. The following account is set down from the writer's rough notes, which as stated above, were made at the time, that is, within a few hours of the actual events themselves. 22nd of March, 3 p.m. Death seems very close at hand and there is no apparent sign of consciousness. Directly above the dying man I can see a shadowy form that hovers in a horizontal position about 2 feet above the bed. This form is attached to the physical body on the bed by two transparent elastic cords. One of them appears to be attached to the solar plexus and the other to the brain. As I watch this form, it grows more distinct in outline, until I can see that it is an exact counterpart, so far as form is concerned, of the body on the bed. I can see what looks like spiral currents passing up through these two cords, and as the physical body grows more lifeless, the form hovering above seems to become vital. 3:15 p.m. Two figures have now appeared and stand one on either side of the bed against the wall. They are tall and radiant, but these forms seem to my vision to be of some finer form of matter than the double that is hovering above the bed. 3:40 p.m. This double has become still more distinct. I can see that the cords are still attached to Major P.S. body, and the currents referred to above have now gathered considerable upward momentum. The life force is apparently passing into the form above. 3:55 p.m. The two figures stoop down over the bed and seem to break off the cords at points close to the physical body. Immediately I see that the form or double rises about 2 feet from its original position, but remains horizontal, and at this same moment, Major P.S. heart stops beating. Footnote: for several hours before this, there had been no apparent consciousness or outward sign of life. So far as I can see, Major P.S. life currents have been drawn out from his body and have passed up through the two luminous cords into the double or subtle body that has just been described. This form is still hovering above the bed, but the life within it shows no sign of outward consciousness. 4:30 p.m. I can no longer see the two figures that were present before and at the moment of death, but what I take to be the soul of the dead man seems to be asleep within its new garment, and is totally dissociated from the body on the bed. 10:30 p.m. Dissolution of the material body has already begun. I can still see the new body in the death chamber, but it is no longer quite so distinct in outline. It appears to be asleep. Footnote: for the sake of convenience from this point onward, the term Major P is to be taken as referring not to the dead body, but to the life within what might be called the ethereal body that has just been described. No further notes were recorded until about 10 a.m. on 23rd March. 23rd of March, 10 a.m. There seems to be some disturbance in the conditions around Major P, but he does not wake to a realization of his new state of consciousness. 12 midday. The sleeping form is drawn back toward Earth conditions and becomes more opaque in appearance. A sort of fluctuation, an ebb and flow, is going on, but I cannot explain in detail what I mean by these terms as applied to a purely non-physical phenomenon. 4 p.m. I can see two great luminous wings outstretched over Major P.S. sleeping form, and they appear to be providing protection against some possible danger. 7 p.m. I can no longer see Major P, either in the death chamber or out of it, but I am quite conscious of his existence, and am fully aware, in some remarkable manner, of the conditions by which he now appears to be surrounded. For instance, I am fully convinced that the form in which he now finds himself has become more luminous, while it still resembles in outline the physical body he has just left, but I cannot prove to myself, or to anyone else, from what source this conviction has reached me. 24th of March, 8 a.m. Major P. seems to be drawn back until he again appears as actually present in the house and in the death chamber itself. His form is still lying in an apparently reclining position. 4 p.m. The wings are still there, full of light and color, rose and violet, clear orange and royal blue. They seem to prevent the approach of evil influences and also to act as a protection against the loving but inevitably mistaken desire of those left behind that he should return to them. 7 p.m. Another figure is watching and waiting near Major P, who is not yet fully awake. It seems to be that of a friend who died some time ago. He will, I feel, be useful in explaining the new conditions of life to the new arrival. It is curious that I cannot communicate with this figure. 25th March. 2:30 a.m. There are signs of waking. The guardians, the two figures, return. There is movement of the form and probably there will soon be semi-consciousness. I am fully aware of all this, although physically speaking, I can no longer see anything. 6:30 a.m. Movement and impulsive semi-unconscious response to thought waves from this side. Prayer and protection though are invaluable at such a time. 10 a.m. A state of quiescent semi-consciousness. No memory of illness or death, but a hazy sensation of lying asleep in bed at home. There is no curiosity, very little memory, only rest and peace, and a curiously subtle feeling of security. 12 midday. Slight memory returns, and with it a vision of home. A slight feeling of distress, probably due to the great grief and suffering of some loved one. Now, for the first time, curiosity and speculation begin to assert themselves, but more sleep follows. An awakening to fuller consciousness seems imminent, and the breathlessness of first impressions is in the air. 3 p.m. More complete consciousness and an anxiety to use and to understand new powers and possibilities. For the first time conscious volition and movement are noted. Then a sudden wave of memory relating to Earth life matters, and as suddenly as a flash the wave is gone, leaving no apparent trace. While it lasted, it was possible for the writer to arrest certain impressions that related to those on Earth. They took the form of messages to his own family, and being of a private and personal nature, are not inserted here. 4 p.m. More sleep follows. But Major P is getting accustomed to his new garment and surroundings. And although all memory of the past is wiped out temporarily at least, yet perhaps it is more merciful so, because otherwise the memories of Earth life might draw the soul back to Earth conditions, making progress and development difficult. Probably memory will return, but in a more subtle and less crude form, and he may be unconsciously, or otherwise, allowed to help his people in their great grief and loneliness. But it is unlikely, and not very wise, that there should be any definite or direct messages, nor should these be asked for, because nothing can be gained on either side by drawing the soul back to earth conditions. 7 p.m. The guardians are still there. Also, the other watcher, referred to above, is trying gradually to obtain response and recognition. It is becoming difficult to sense the conditions around the newly awakened soul, and still more difficult to describe them adequately in an intelligible manner. There seems to be no memory of the earth life, nor of the body left behind, and the soul, whose passing over we have been trying to describe, has no knowledge of his own body's funeral, nor of earth conditions generally. The foregoing notes will probably appear more intelligible when considered in relation to the experience that is given under the second heading. As explained earlier, the following account is based upon the dying man's own experiences and sensations, so far as it was possible to gather them, and is given exactly as perceived. The account is chaotic, vague, and somewhat hysterical, but is this to be wondered at in the circumstances? Who could give a careful analysis and controlled descriptions of such, for them, stupendous happenings? 2. I have been laid up a long time, and am becoming indifferent to matters of material moment that used to be of such absorbing interest to me. The pain of illness is at times acute, and on the whole I rather look forward to dying, even if it should only give me restful sleep. I have no idea of what dying means, but as the days go on I seem to be standing in an open doorway, and on the side which I am still facing, all the events of my life are portrayed before me in symbolic form. I can see myself as a child, as a boy, as a man, and it is as if I were watching myself on a stage, when suddenly all the threads of the past gradually gather themselves together and shoot past me as one whole through the doorway in which I am standing and into the beyond. What beyond? I turn round to look, and as I do so an overpowering feeling that I am about to sever my connection with earth life comes over me. Yet I am still myself, and still, physically speaking, in bed, surrounded by those I know and love, quite conscious of pain and movement, although only dreamingly interested in the remarks that are being made. If the doctor tells me I shall live, it will make me smile, for am I not actually standing on the threshold of real life? How can he talk of life and death like that, when he cannot know what I know? And so I turn almost with relief and with my back to the past, face through the doorway, towards the strange country of light and life. Why have the threads of my life rushed past and left me standing on the threshold? Why do I seem powerless to take a step forward into the strange and varied land that looks so interesting, so near and yet so far away? Footnote: the threads of life referred to may have shown themselves thus to the dying man, because his life force was passing out of his physical body into his new body, via the luminous cords or channels referred to earlier. These cords evidently appeared to him as a door, a long way distant. Now I see myself, but can that be myself? Footnote: this must refer to the body or form into which he is about to pass, that form lying there asleep among the trees by the moss-grown stream in that fair land. I am distant still, and far from that self that looks so restful, sleeping, yet so much alive. I stand waiting and wondering upon the threshold, and see those threads from the past shoot by and through me into the future, until they seem to focus upon that distant form, which is myself yet not myself. What is this mystery? And still I am in bed, and they have injected something, and I am being forcibly held down. If they only knew, and would let me go, I can be of more service there to them all, when once the wrench of apparent parting is over. Their voices sound faint, and the room recedes. I am as if I were extracting the real me from the unreal me, yet not that either, but as if I were rushing through myself and through myself, and through running water, rushing air and Is it really me? I must find the door for me, the only safe entrance to the beyond, to that country where I can rejoin myself. Yes, I will go, yes I will give up earth life or whatever it is that I have just been through. Have I been on earth? What earth? I cannot remember. There is the doorway, right ahead, and I am traveling fast, rushing towards it, the one and only door for me into the beyond. Am I there? It is so dim, there is the sound of rushing waters, and I only wish and pray for rest and sleep and peace. At this point physical death took place, received some hours later. The rushing waters are still about me, but I am still, thank God for that, to rest and listen, and no longer be afraid, to feel safe, it is wonderful. I cannot see the door, but I know I am on the right side of it now. Footnote: this probably refers to the snapping of the earth cords. These cords evidently play an important part at the time of death, and that is closed behind me. What door? Where am I? Who was I before I found myself? Is this my real self, lying so quietly here with flowers and green around me, great strong trees, and sunlight diffused into many colors everywhere? Footnote: it is interesting to note that Major P. described this scene to his nurse some days before his death and quite unknown to the present writer, who only heard of the fact some time after these notes had been set down. The air is not air, it is color, but such color, and it keeps changing as I lie and watch it changing until I can no longer fathom its mysterious beauty. I have slept again, I am where I am, yet I am everywhere. I am myself, yet I am a self that is far greater and vaster than what I thought and felt to be myself. I am quite still, yet I am swiftly moving. I am neither, yet I am both. The sensation grows of the past whirling itself away into itself, yet it is here where it never was, because there is no past. It is stupendous, yet it is humiliation. For how dare I stir all the wonderful mechanism in and around me into motion and activity? Who was I? Where was I? Where am I now? Are these part of me? These symbols that I see before me in countless shades and lights, color forms, swiftly merging themselves from one great vibrating whirl into the vortex of the next? Are these my lives, my life, myself? What mystery is this? Every time I feel, or think, I quiver intensely and my surroundings change, and I lose myself and lose my surroundings, and stir up all kinds of colors, signs, and symbols. Why do I travel when I think? Cannot I think and remain myself and still? Am I yet sure that this is myself? I see, but cannot understand these forms that seem alive and flash past me. Is it speech, or the reflection of my thought, or the thought of others? God grant me rest and peace and knowledge. What is this? What are these flashes? Is it a sudden answer to my prayer? For I seem to know now who I am, or rather who it is that controls this mechanism to which I belong, which vibrates and flashes, lives and moves, and evidently is a part of me. Now I see more, and understand more. I am no longer so entirely lost within the bosom of my own extensive being. If I rest again and wait, it will be easier. Then I will move, or rather, as I see it, make those others move to me, for I am here, and all there is can evidently be here for me. But I will sleep first, and wait and watch. All will then come my way, and I shall become all things. Here the fragment ended, and it became impossible to secure any further communication. Part V, Survival, the Interlude of Silence. Many research students in this field will have met with the same question that so often comes my way. It is this: during serious illness there is often a sense of the nearness of the next world which is felt both by the patient and those around him. It is as if the two states of consciousness were approaching one another and at times even intermingling. If, however, the illness proves fatal, to use the customary phrase, then an interim period follows, during which the silence of the grave descends upon those who are left behind. No longer does the next world appear to be close at hand, but contact seems to have been broken, followed by a vacuum or a sense of void. This experience does not hold good where those concerned have lost all fear of death and are familiar to some extent upon the conditions into which we pass when we go away from life on earth. Nevertheless, the temporary void felt by the bereaved is a distressing and still far too common an experience. Why should this be so? In my view, the explanation is both simple and consoling. Firstly, let us realize that the silence of the grave is not a negative condition but a silence filled with the qualities of healing and tranquility. The primary need of the soul on arrival over there is to be free, free first to sleep and then to learn how to use the new form now clothing him, and to begin to understand the strange conditions by which he finds himself surrounded. For these purposes, it is imperative that all emotional disturbances should be avoided, especially those caused by the grief, depression, regret, and sometimes fear, of those he has left behind whose faith in an afterlife is faint or non-existent. It is here that Providence steps in and, acting at her most merciful, screens the soul, temporarily, from all these mundane contacts, which could disturb or delay progress and understanding. For those who do not realize the need for this protective screening process, what appears to be loss of contact can prove distressing. The interlude in question may last for weeks or even months of our time and varies with each individual. Prayers for the departed during this period should avoid regretful thinking or attempts at communication and should be directed toward holding the loved one up in the light and the grace of the Creator's love. At such a time, there is no better way for those who are left behind to be of real service and true help. Very real relief is experienced so soon as it is realized that Providence knows her own business best, the result being that the interlude in question can be shortened and communication becomes possible once more. Feelings of sorrow and separation will fall into the past and love will have triumphed over death, which in any case is a gateway and not a goal. WTP written in 1966.